Hello and a very warm welcome to Centre Stage. Good to have you with us. Now, the 68th annual session of the UN General Assembly was anything but an ordinary UN General Assembly meeting. It was full of moments which many referred to as historic, moments that created much excitement and generated intense media interest. I think it's fair to say that UN 2013 was unlike any other. Hello again and welcome back. Now, to talk about this year's one-of-a-kind and utterly unique UN General Assembly meeting, I'm delighted to be joined by two top guests. Now, in our Tehrani studio, we've got the pleasure of being joined by a professional journalist. Mr. Hamid Golpira, it's a pleasure to have you with us.
Well, how are you doing? Thanks for inviting me on your show.
Thanks very much indeed. I'm doing fine and I hope you is the same with you. Now, let me just tell you that Mr. Hamid Golpira is a top writer working with Tehran Times. Some of his articles have been translated into several languages, including German and Russian. Hamid's also working for Press TV. Now, over the phone from a state in the southeast of the US, we're pleased to be joined by a political scientist, Professor Nader Entisar. Welcome to Centre Stage.
Thank you very much.
It's great to have you with us. Now, Professor Nader Entisar is professor and chairman at the Department of Political Science and Criminal Justice, University of South Alabama. Time for a short break.
The United Nations 2013 was most certainly unlike any other, and the person who made it that way was the newly elected Iranian president, Hassan Rouhani. Prudence and moderation were two key words by which he not only found his way to the presidential palace in Tehran, but also made his first appearance in the United Nations General Assembly. In an informative article written by Dr. Mohammad Hassan Khani, an independent Iranian academic and an associate professor of international relations at Imam Sadegh University in Tehran, which was published by the Japan Times, several important points concerning the West's reply to the Iranian prudence and moderation were raised. The article reads, "For the outside world to decide how to deal with Rouhani and his foreign policy top man, Dr. Javad Zarif, a fine diplomat, it is essential to understand what prudence and moderation mean and what they don't mean. The Iranian definition of moderation and prudence is equal to common sense, being rational, making decisions based on wisdom and maturity, constructive interaction with the international community, distancing oneself from emotions, rhetoric, and demagogy, and opposing extremism of any kind. It also means a tendency towards détente, reconciliation, and integration with neighboring countries and international system as a whole, by seeking common grounds and areas of common interests between Iran and the rest of the world. Nevertheless, for moderation and prudence to work properly and lead to tangible results, the response from the outside world and other parties, including the United States and the West, must be that of moderation and prudence too. A dialogue based on these two virtues can surely work better than one based on extremism and insanity. It would be a fatal mistake for the United States to perceive and interpret Iran's adoption of moderation and prudence as a sign of weakness, fear, or as a unilateral concession. Such a perception would again re-strengthen the old conviction and belief in Tehran and across the Muslim world that the West and the United States are not honest and trustworthy and use a language of violence, intimidation, coercion, double standards, hypocrisy, and extremism. By pursuing its old policy, the United States would miss a historic opportunity for finding a prudent reconciliation with Iran and political Islam. The price for such a mistake would be high for all sides. As the Islamic Republic of Iran approaches its fourth decade, the age of maturity, it continues to evolve. It seems that its leaders have also learned how to adapt the country to realities while maintaining the ideals of the revolution that was called the last great revolution of the 20th century. The West and the United States now have two options. The first option is to maintain the old ailing strategy of refusal to recognize Iran and Iranian roles and to try to isolate the country at any cost. The second option is to accept the reality of the Islamic Republic as an important player in regional and international levels, engaging genuinely and constructively with Tehran and benefiting from the huge potential of its political and economic cooperation and contribution towards resolving crises in the region and beyond. They have apparently tried the first option for many years without any positive and tangible results so far. Logic and common sense tell us that it's worth trying the second option now to see if it works.
Hello again, it's great to have you with us. Now we're going to talk about the last couple of weeks, which were really extraordinary weeks. Now, Iranian President Hassan Rouhani and his American counterpart Barack Obama held a telephone conversation as the Iranian president was wrapping up his visit to New York for the 68th annual session of the UN General Assembly. Professor Entisar, it's the first conversation between American and Iranian presidents in over 30 years. This was an utterly historic moment, wasn't it?
Yes, I mean, definitely it was. And it, depending on what will happen in the next few months, of course, it could be even, the seminal event of the in international relations, of course, of the 21st century. There's no question that this was on par with Nixon's trip to China in the early 70s, or to a lesser extent, of course, you know, the events that led to the fall of the Berlin Wall.
Right. Thanks very much indeed. Now, we know that President Obama, Hamid, may have the authority to lift some of the sanctions, because they're one of the key points that President Rouhani actually stressed upon was lifting the sanctions. We know that President Obama may have the power to lift some of the sanctions, but it's up to the Senate to lift some other important sanctions. Do you think that there is any guarantee that he can get the Congress to do so?
Well, I think if it seems like things are moving forward and it's in their best interest, then the Congress will do it. Although there are some very intransigent, far right wing, anti-Iran, anti-third world types in the Senate and the Congress in general, that's especially among some of the Republicans, that they might want to take a hard line against Iran, always pressuring Iran and not being open to a better kind of dialogue. So. Depends how the situation pans out. But I think if it seems like things are going in a good direction, that that Republicans or others will have a hard time blocking some kind of, at least a lightening of some of the sanctions to begin with. I don't think they're going to drop and cancel and rescind all of the sanctions immediately. It'll probably be a step-by-step process. But if some little concession is made on the part of the U.S. and some little concession on the part of Iran, and it seems like there's some kind of reciprocal balance going on, and then things could maybe move forward, it seems to me.
Do you think that probably President Obama was doing all this without the the consent of the Congress? Is it possible?
Well, Congress has two main parties, pretty much, and he's of the Democrats, and they pretty much dominate the Senate, but not the lower house, the House of Representatives. So I mean, he is the leader of his party. He is the head of state and the president. So his party, at least, you know, most of them are going to have to back him up in Congress. Okay, there might be a few renegades and rogues here and there, but I think for the most part, the Democrats will agree with and back up their president, who is also a Democrat. What the Republicans do, that's not as clear, but I think some of them are a little bit more moderate, that they might also see that it's necessary to make some progress now than to just follow this old hard line that's been going on for so long.
Okay, great. Thanks very much indeed, Hamid. Now, we actually know that in terms of the time frame for resolving the nuclear issue, President Rouhani told Washington Post last week, quote, the shorter it is, the more beneficial it is to everyone. If it's 3 months, that would be Iran's choice. If it's 6 months, that's still good. And he added, it's a question of months, not years. Now, Professor Entisar, that's a quite ambitious framework, isn't it?
Yes, I just don't think it's doable in 3 months. And certainly in 6 months, again, is quite optimistic, because the gap between Iran's position and then the U.S. position, or stated position, publicly stated position of the U.S. is really huge. We are still, we don't know what the U.S. really wants out of these negotiations. Publicly, they still claim that, you know, they want complete halt of uranium enrichment and complete dismantling, actually, of Iranian nuclear facilities, which will be a non-starter and will kill any hope of negotiations. Susan Rice, the National Security Advisor, a couple of days ago actually came out on television and said so. But we don't know. We don't know whether this is, you know, at this time this is public posturing or actually, you know, it's a position when negotiations begin. But in any case, even under the best of circumstances, solving this issue or coming to some kind of understanding within 3 to 6 months, I think, is very, very optimistic and not doable.
But, Professor, you mentioned Susan Rice, and we know that President Obama, actually in his meeting with the Israeli Prime Minister, mentioned a number of points which probably shows that, I mean, to quote just the Zarif, is a sort of flip-flop sort of statements. So do you think that probably they have to do this, they don't have much choice, but at the end of the day, they really want to go ahead with this?
Well, I mean, it's obviously, you know, some of it is you have to look at it, look at the context within which these statements are made. But again, we are at this time, you know, the federal government is shut down in the U.S. And President Obama is in a major battle with Congress and his opponents in Congress to actually even have a functioning government. There are so many things on President Obama's plate, including the domestic problems he's had with Congress, that it's hard to imagine that the president and Congress would come up to a meeting of minds on major foreign policy issues, like in the near future on Iran or other major foreign policy issues. There are certain members of Congress, and there are, it's a significant number of them. It's not just one or two that are dead set to undermine this administration, as they say, hell or high water.
Okay, great. Thanks very much indeed. What do you think? I mean, first of all, about the time frame, which was actually mentioned by President Rouhani, and secondly, the fact that not just one voice is coming from the U.S. establishment.
Well, on the time frame, I also think, yes, maybe it's a little bit overly optimistic, but I think significant progress, if not like some major breakthrough or everything being solved, but some significant progress on a deal should be able to be made in this 3 to 6 month period, at least something that one could see, say, we've gotten from here to here. If not like a final deal, if everyone is willing to work together, if all the factors, you know, work out as, you know, in just the right way, I think at least we could see fairly significant progress. Not maybe a complete final deal, but something even close maybe could happen if everyone is working together. And about the different voices, I mean, yeah, the Republicans are, like, if you see in this government shutdown, as Professor Entisar said, they want to do everything to undermine the current president, President Obama, even to the point of ruining the country, making it that things don't operate, funding is not happening for for so many things, and in many ways that shows the Republicans' selfishness, really, that like just in order to like seem that they're making a point or something, or to act uncooperative with the current president, right, they're doing things that are harmful to the country as a whole. But I think that will end up slowly backfiring on the Republicans, because you'll see they will get less votes. I think in the current polling, like people are blaming the Republicans for this congressional logjam, and they will also blame the Republicans for other problems too, but especially for this, the general public is not satisfied with this intransigence and this hard-headedness and unwillingness to compromise on the part of the Republicans.
So, Sammy, do you think that probably the issue of the government shutdown may, in one way or another, affect the U.S.-Iranian relationships?
Well, in a kind of indirect way, if it's seen that the Republicans are playing party politics to such an extent that it's undermining national affairs and the interests of the country itself, well, at least there's not an election coming up soon, but they will lose votes most probably in this midterm of election of 2014, and it could be that they lose some degree of power. They will still have the same number of seats in Congress, but maybe they will be a little bit more hesitant to act on some things if they see they're losing public support. They're down in the opinion polls.
Right.
So
which is to the benefit of the Democrats.
To the benefit of the Democrats. And they're all hoping to win the election,
right,
the presidential election, especially in 2016. But with what they know that how they've set themselves up, that things are not looking good for them. Mm. It's not looking good for them.
Okay. So thank you very much indeed, Hamid, for that. Now let's take a short break. After the break, we'll be covering a number of other issues taking center stage over the course of the last week. So please do stay with us. Welcome back. Nice to have you with us. Now, in that interview, the interview that I mentioned actually with Washington Post last week, President Rouhani added on the issue of the nuclear file, we need resolution in a reasonable time, as we just mentioned. Then the road will be paved for further activities. Professor Antisar, what does he mean by further activities, do you think?
Well, I mean, there are the nuclear issue, but what I think President Rouhani meant was that nuclear issue obviously is not the only issue that has divided the U.S. and Iran. There are a number of other regional issues that the resolution of which are predicated on how the nuclear issue is resolved. But the nuclear issue has to be resolved first. Or at least significant movement towards resolving of the issue should be taken first before other issues, or by other I mean regional issues, instability in Syria, that instability in Iraq, Afghanistan, the whole things like that. I think issues that are of important issues, but nonetheless perhaps secondary issues compared to the nuclear issue. That's what President Rouhani was referring to.
So you're saying that probably first and foremost is the nuclear issue, and then we have to think about other probably activities, other issues, including, of course, the peace in the Middle East.
Yes, sure.
Great. So you believe that these two issues are, or these several issues are interrelated, interconnected?
Yes, they are interconnected, and everything revolves around the nuclear issue in terms of the difficulty between U.S. and Iran.
Great, thanks very much. Now, we know that U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says that Washington could begin removing bans on Tehran within months. And Hamid, I want to quote what he said. He said, actually, if a transparent process is in place over Iran's nuclear energy program, he asked for a very verifiable, accountable, and transparent process. Iran has been saying that it's always been transparent. So could you decipher those key words for us? Accountable, verifiable, transparent process.
Well, I think he's using that diplomatic language where it could mean anything. Like, because, I mean, IAE, the International Atomic Energy Agency inspectors come to Iran. Iran's nuclear facilities are open to the IAEA inspectors, and they haven't found any serious issues like a diversion to like nuclear weapons production. So that should mean that everything is okay. But on the other hand, his wording, he could leave the door open to saying, oh, well, I don't know, they didn't look under every rock in every corner. Maybe some strange thing is going on with nuclear weapons production there. So in that way, he's kind of like leaving the door open. He didn't definitely say something really definitive. He used this diplomatic language where it could be interpreted either way. So, but I think at least some of the people in this current U.S. administration do want to make at least some progress, at least the appearance of progress. So, you know, it can't be this endless stalemate, this endless standoff, because it looks like nothing is getting anywhere. So at least something has to happen. And I think they might lighten some of the sanctions, not all of them, and not even lift them, but maybe reduce some to a certain extent, or maybe some of the lesser ones might rescind them. But I don't think they're going to rescind all of those sanctions immediately, especially if they feel they're not satisfied or they're not attaining their goal. So, but one thing I want to say about the nuclear issue also is that maybe a little side thing is that, like, actually in some ways the thing isn't so much about fear of weapons production. Right. Some of it is that this nuclear or uranium enrichment produces fuel for the nuclear reactors. And they're trying to tell Iran, have a nuclear reactor, but don't produce fuel. You have to buy it from outside. See, right. It's a certain economic benefit to Iran has some few uranium mines, so it has its own uranium here, to do the whole nuclear fuel process by mining it and turning it into the nuclear fuel through uranium enrichment. Like, it makes it's much less costly than to buy it from outside this fuel. And also, if they have extra fuel, which is a possibility, they don't have that many uranium reserves, but it seems they have enough that they could power the current one nuclear reactor that they have here now, and they might want to build a few more, but they might have extra nuclear fuel that they could sell to other countries having nuclear reactors like India or other neighboring countries. And then that would also be an economic benefit. I think some elements in this pressure Iran and anti-nuclear issue of Iran, these elements that are against Iran are actually, they're using this issue of, we're afraid of nuclear weapons production as a trick to say Iran can't have nuclear fuel production because that would benefit its economy.
Right, and you're talking about an economic thing. If you look at President Obama and the American establishment talking about Iran's right to nuclear energy, Iran's talking about nuclear technology. So probably the wording is also different. One side talks about energy, the other side talks about technology. Iran wants technology, not just energy.
Yeah, the sticking point is the production of fuel, which comes from this from the enrichment of uranium. So the point is that's pretty much the sticking point. So something has to be worked out on that issue.
Great. Thanks very much indeed. Now, we actually know that Iran and International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, have begun a new round of talks over Tehran's nuclear energy program. So lots of developments, actually, last week. Now, the meeting, the first since Iranian President Hassan Rouhani took office, opened in the Austrian capital, Vienna, behind closed doors on Friday. Now, IAEA says the latest round of talks with Iran was, quote, very constructive, end quote, and that the two sides will meet again on October 28th. Now, Professor Entisar, do you share IAEA's optimism?
Well, again, that's a language that IAEA has used in the past, too. We don't really know about the details of what went on in the latest round of negotiations between Iran and IAEA, but the problem with the Iran-IAEA relations in recent years is mostly a political issue. That is where the problem comes. If IAEA acts as a purely technical entity, I think that in that respect, you know, answers given by Iran and questions asked by IAEA can be handled a lot more smoothly. But the whole issue has turned into a political football, and IAEA has been sort of gotten involved in the middle of all these things and has lost some of its main missions and has become a political entity as opposed to a technical entity that it was supposed to be. And therein lies the major problem between Iran and IAEA. IAEA deals with every single country, other countries that it deals with on a strictly technical matter. When it comes to Iran, all kinds of political issues are thrown in the midst of all the technical questions they raise. And that's where we're going around the circle constantly.
Okay, Professor Antasar, I know that we only have the pleasure of having you for 4 minutes from now. So I'd just like to put a key question to you before we will not have that pleasure. And that question is, what's your prognosis of the future of U.S.-Iranian relations and, of course, the developments concerning the nuclear energy program?
Again, I mean, if certainly last couple of weeks, a number of goodwill measures have been taken on both sides, but again, they have to translate into concrete political steps, and there are lots of we're walking through a minefield, and both sides have to be very careful as to how to navigate this minefield. As I mentioned before, and as you have discussed in this program, essentially, the issue of sanctions and the lessening of those sanctions, it's itself is a major minefield to navigate. There are so many different types of sanctions, U.S. sanctions I'm talking about here. Some are strictly based on executive orders issued by the president. Those are much easier to remove or not enforce. The most important parts of the sanctions, of course, are sanctions that have been codified in law. And the only way to remove those is for Congress to pass another set of laws. And the way Congress works in the U.S., those things, even on the best of circumstances, will take several years to undo. So I don't see major things happening, just baby steps may be taken, and it's going to take several years before we have something resembling normalcy in
U.S. relations. Not 30 years.
No, not 30 years. No, not definitely 30 years. Right. No, but you're talking about, several years, 7, 8, 9 years.
Professor, you mentioned the minefield. So just two very straightforward questions. Who's planted those mines, and is there anybody who could defuse those mines?
Well, it's like, the minefield, a lot of it has been planted by U.S., of course. But again, like in the actual minefields in the middle of battlefields, it's a lot easier to plan them, to plant the minefields and then to defuse and remove them. Removing of mines is an extremely more difficult, technically difficult and laborious process than planting mines.
Right. So, Professor Antasar, thank you very much indeed for having taken the time to be our guest on this Central Stage. Thank you very much indeed for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Now, we're going to take a short break. After the break, we'll have Central Stage online search, where we go on the internet to talk about what's picked for you, which has taken Central Stage over the course of the last couple of weeks. So please do stay with Central Stage. Hello again, great to have you with us. Now let's have a look at some interesting websites and pages, Hamid. The first one, Press TV's website, US may begin lifting Iran sanctions in months. So there we had Professor Antasar, and you also saying that probably it's too ambitious, isn't it, just in months, considering the fact that Senate is also, and some of them has been codified to law.
Yes, well, so that would be a problem. But like I said, I think there might be, like I said before, some lessening of the sanctions in order to show that some concession is being made, because there has to be at least the smallest concession. Like this Professor Antasar said, some baby steps are being taken, and it seems like they do want to take at least some of these tiny baby steps. So
some baby sanctions may be off.
Or, yeah, perhaps.
I hope that the babies are not very thin. Mm. So let's go to our next web page. So at least sometimes it takes a bit of time, technical issues. Right, so we are still waiting to have the next website. I think I have, right, okay. So Iran P5 plus one holds substantial talks at UN, according to Ashton. Look at just these faces. They look very, I think, optimistic. And particularly if you look at, Karen Ashton's face, you see that on the right. She seems very optimistic, happy, delighted.
I think they feel something is happening. I think they also believe that new Iranian Foreign Minister Zarif has a more interactive style, and not so confrontational, so they may feel relaxed with him.
I think both Zarif and Rouhani, they actually use modern technology to convey their message. They tweet, they actually...
All that stuff, Facebook. Right. They know the public relations.
It's the first time, isn't it?
PR for a while. Yeah, of Iranian leadership. In the Iranian leadership, they're more this 21st century, internet, modern technology, social media, all that, and that general public relations PR. They know this digital age a little better than the people before, probably, and definitely than the people from decades before.
Right. So. Of course, at that time, they didn't exist.
Well, they didn't have that, but there was the beginning. But yeah, maybe like a decade or so ago, there was the beginnings of, there was internet and things a decade ago, not many decades ago, but.
Thanks. Yeah. Okay, let's go to our next website. Right, this is actually France 24 website, 24. So Obama, Rouhani speak by phone on nuclear program. I think that was actually a piece of news which created much media interest, didn't it?
Well, it was an important issue, and I agree with the Professor Antasar that it's somewhat like, I don't 100% agree that it's like when Nixon went to China all that four decades ago, all that time ago, but it's a little bit like it. Maybe it's like the precursor to that, and maybe one time they'll have, like they were talking about having a face-to-face meeting, so maybe one day this Hassan and Hussein, Hassan Rouhani and Barack Hussein Obama will meet, and then that will really be like Nixon going to China.
Right.
Then that will really be like Nixon going to China in at that time.
Okay, thanks very much. So. Let's go to our next website. Okay, this is actually in our website, the official Iranian news agency. So Iranian US presidents talk over the phone, and it was, I think INA was one of the first Iranian websites which actually talked about that sort of telephone conversation. And I think the choice of the pictures is also quite nice, isn't it? I mean, both of them look very optimistic. And if you look at the viewpoint, the column, you see all the actually the news is about Rouhani. Rouhani gives proposal to UN to any blah blah blah. And so actually, this gentleman has created much media circus, hasn't
he? Well, I wouldn't necessarily want to call it a circus because that can have some bad connotations. But he's made a media splash, one could say, and like as he is doing the PR in a good way. The public relations is fairly good so far.
And what about media frenzy? Splash. Is it a better?
It depends. That could be here and there also. I mean, there's a bit
probably intense media interest. Yeah. That is your choice.
Yeah. Okay,
I just mentioned the case of actually creating media interest. And this is our last web page, Yahoo News, of course. Iranian Foreign Minister Javad Zarif, Holocaust. A heinous crime and a genocide, and I think that has probably always been, the belief of Iranians that actually Holocaust, in fact, did happen and that it was a genocide. But probably that's the first, not the first time, but one of the times it has been very clearly stated, very strongly, and very openly. So. To show that, I think some of the things that President Rouhani mentioned were quite interesting. He mentioned about the life of Jews, that they're quite respectable, exactly like the life of a Muslim or Christian, so there's no difference. that was actually quoting President Rouhani. So I think it's left no place for those who are saying that Iran is denying Holocaust. So this has made at least the official...
Yeah, it's being less provocative. But even before, the issue wasn't denying the Holocaust completely. The issue was there were some fine points that some agree with and some didn't agree, but they were bringing up that some fine points of history might be not, or the way it's being depicted is not exactly how things were. But some of that got blown out of proportion too, and some of the issues they brought up were not the actual issues.
Muslims and Jews actually, or the Judaism and Islam, they are deeply interconnected, interrelated. A number of the decrees are probably very similar. So I think probably the closeness, these two religions are really close, really interconnected, interrelated.
So there's Abrahamic religions, they come from like Christianity, from Abraham was a founding father and original prophet, so they probably can be called these Abrahamic religions.
And when you look at the rules and laws of the religions, probably there is much more similarity between Islam and Judaism than Islam and Christianity.
Some things are similar, some dietary laws, strictness of
monotheism. Halal, they have kosher, lots
halal
of similarities.
Yeah, halal and kosher is really, really close, if not exactly the same. But also the issue is that since the creation of Israel, there was bad relations or relations between Muslims and Jews then went cold, because there was centuries of time when in the Islamic world Jews felt more safe, whereas in the European world Jews were suffering persecution like pogroms and things.
Right.
So that's a major issue.
Thanks very much indeed. Now let's talk a little bit. We have just about 3 minutes, and there are two questions I want to mention. The first is actually about the resolution in Syria. The first time the resolution in the Security Council is being passed without being vetoed. So do you think that's a step forward?
Well, yes, it is. You're talking about the resolution on the chemical weapons and disarmament of chemical weapons. Well, that's a definite step forward. It's a good move, and if it seems like it prevents some major wars from happening, it's a very significant it's a very significant event if it does prevent a major war from happening. So so it's a significant event.
And so the last question, which is I think always normally the key question, is that what's your prognosis of the future of the nuclear issue and of course the future of Iranian-US relations?
I think they will slowly thaw. It might be a little bit of some glacial slow thaw in the relations, but I think they will slowly thaw out, even if there's some kind of rivalry. Like I said, we made the comparison, Nixon going to China. Well, okay, but like China had at that time no relations with the U.S. from 1949 to 72, so what is that, over a couple of decades, and then they didn't actually formally exchange ambassadors till the late 70s, so it was like 30 years, it was three decades. And there's a certain parallel, where and then China still remained a kind of a rival of the USA, and it still is now, at least economically. But at the end of the Mao era, it was very much politically a rival and many other things. And even militarily, they were friends with they were supporting North Korea against South Korea that the U.S. was allied with. They were supporting North Vietnam against South Vietnam, which was the U.S. ally. So there was a lot of things happening, and they finally exchanged ambassadors, but still have a certain rivalry. So there might be some parallels along those lines. And like I say, along the lines of this Nixon going to China, something might happen.
Thank you very much indeed, Hamid, for that. So unfortunately, that's all the time we've got for the moment. Before I go, I'd like to thank again our top guests, particularly our guest in our Tehran studio, Hamid Golpira, established journalist and writer working for Tehran Times, because I already thanked our other knowledgeable guest in the US. As always, your insights are much appreciated. Thanks for coming on, for talking to us, and of course for those insights. Until next week, from me, our guests today, and the rest of the team, it's goodbye for now. Thanks very much indeed for watching. Thank you very much. It's great to have you with us. Thank you.